Welcome to the Anorexia Bulimia Special Focus Meeting. My name is Lauren. I'm an anorexic and compulsive overeater and your speaker for this meeting. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before we get started, we ask that all cell phones or other electronic devices be turned off. To protect anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed except as recorded by the committee. Please be aware that if you are speaking or sharing and say your first name, your voice will be audible on the recording. I'll pass it around a release form to sign. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent Region 2 or Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. Would someone volunteer to read the 12 steps?
Christina, compulsive eater.
Hi, Christina.
One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our own. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
The format for this 55-minute session is as follows. A short reading, and then I will share for 10 to 15 minutes, followed by open sharing. The topic for the special focus session is anorexia and bulimia. The following is a reading from the pamphlet, A Program of Recovery. Many of us have found the following questions useful to help determine if we have a problem with compulsive eating. Here are some of them. 4. Do I eat sensibly in front of others and then make up for it when I'm alone? Is my eating affecting my health or the way I live my life? Do my eating behaviors make me or others unhappy? Have I ever used laxatives, vomiting, diuretics, excessive exercise, diet pills, shots, or other medical interventions, including surgery, to try to control my weight? Do I fast or severely restrict my food intake to control my weight? Do I fantasize about how much better life would be if I were a different size or weight? Do I spend too much time thinking about food, arguing with myself about whether or what to eat, planning the next diet, or exercise cure, or count to count? Seems like a good place to start sharing my experience, strength, and hope on the topic. I will say, I'd love to take a group conscience. I'm comfortable while I'm speaking to leave the door open so that more people can join us. And I think group conscience, is everyone else comfortable with that? Please raise your hand. Yes. Perfect.
I'm going to maybe shut it in 5 or 10 minutes to come out.
Yeah, no problem. I'm also not going to use the microphone for right now, but just literally flag me down if it's hard to hear me speak in any way. I would love, let's say, 10 minutes, and then we'll see if I need the extra 5. Again, my name is Lauren. I'm an anorexic and compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, everyone. Thank you guys so much for being here. I just celebrated on January 17th 10 years of being in the program of freedom from obsession of food, and my particular abstinence is not willfully skipping meals, so I'm 10 years abstinent of that. I also live in Los Angeles and have never been to the birthday party before. And now that I'm here, I'm like, what was I thinking, you know? It's pretty amazing. So I spent most of the week leading up to this thinking, like, what am I possibly going to share about it? You know, like, I have no idea. And then last night, I got some bad news about my career. And God clearly wanted me to be here this morning to start the process of that, of dealing with that bad news. And I realized, like, what a blessing it was to have this to come to this morning. Because I didn't know, like, I was filled with such sadness over this career thing. And I didn't know how to begin to process it. And I began to process it by getting in my car and driving here this morning. That's all I had to do. All I had to do. Which really sort of made me think about what I wanted to share about, which is over 10 years, the last 10 years, life has been really imperfect, you know? Like, I've got a lot of gifts in my life, a lot of lovely, wonderful things, but it's not like the road has been without bumps. And for me, really, it's about how do I stay abstinent when the bumps happen? Because I can tell you last night, I mean, even 10 years in, I get this bad news on the phone, I hang it up, I cry. My husband, like, pats my shoulder. And then my first thought is, like, what can I have for dinner? You know? My first thought. What's so interesting to me is that we fixed dinner, and I had no more or no less than I would have had the night before, before I had the bad news. And that's God. You know? It is, to be honest, it pisses me off sometimes, because I really, like, eating something is so much better than feeling feelings. It doesn't really, but in the moment it does, you know? And I get mad that those things don't work anymore because I have no option just to sit in the pain. However, the interesting thing is that the pain passes much more quickly when I actually sit in it. I don't know how that happens. It's a miracle. But eating just pushes it down, pushes it away. It still exists. Living through it, it actually starts to dissipate. I brought a journal with me, because as I was writing my fourth step, I was going through, some bad stuff in life. I had gotten engaged to a wonderful man who's now my husband, and 10 days before our wedding, he was diagnosed with cancer. And it obviously changed a lot emotionally for us. You know, there was that moment of knowing that we were going to stand in front of all of our friends and family and say sickness and in health, and suddenly there was a face on the sickness, you know, like that was actually real. It wasn't just something we were saying. And up to that point, that was about 5 years into the program, and up to that point, I liked God. I was okay with God. I didn't have a real sense of God. Not that I didn't trust God, but I didn't think all that much about God. And my sponsor led me through all sorts of exercises about writing down what I thought my dream was, you know, what I wanted, how I wanted my higher power to take care of me, and I did all those. But I really, like, I just sort of knew that, like, it hadn't really sunk in yet. And for the first year after we got married, his particular type of cancer, when he went through treatments, would mean that we would not be able to have children anymore. And we had always wanted kids, you know, that's just been part of our plan. So his doctor said, go try to get pregnant. What do you guys think? Should we close the door now? It's starting to be a little loud. Thank you so much. you know, his doctor said, go try to get pregnant. Which sounded fun. We were newlyweds, trying to get pregnant seems not so bad. And so that's what we did. And we ended up having almost immediately two miscarriages. And, well, I'll just read to you, because my sponsor said, I'd like you to write a letter to God. Write a letter to God, tell your higher power all of your feelings, and then have God write a letter back to you in his hand. Okay, like, to me, that was such an exercise of, like, whatever. I'm actually a writer by trade. It's what I do for a living. and this seemed dumb to me. However, I was also in no place to say, no thanks, you know. I was, I needed help. So, I will read to you my letter to God, and then I will read to you God's letter back to me, and then we'll talk about that. Dear God, I apologize, this is very intimate, but why else are we here? Dear God, I am so angry at you. I feel so betrayed by you. I thought you wanted us to have this baby in our lives. I thought you trusted us with it. And then I thought we really deserved it. Haven't we done everything you asked? I prayed and prayed and prayed to you. And I'm trying to have faith in what you know is right for me. But God, I'm not sure I can take, I have much more in me. The pain on top of pain is exhausting. My husband broke down this morning. Did you see that? Did you see what this is doing to us? We're falling apart in many ways. We're trying to be strong, because as angry as we are, as angry as I am, I still believe that you're there for me. I'm still looking for the silver lining, still searching for the reasons this life has happened. That's faith, right? If it isn't, I don't know what is. But I'm still so sad. I'm just sad. So, God writes back to me. Dear Lauren, I'm glad you're sad. Because that means you are not covering your feelings in food. That is recovery, and that is my first consideration. But I'm also sorry you're sad, because it hurts me to see you in pain. But I can see things you can't see right now. I can see through the pain and into why this happened and what it can bring you in the future. This was simply not meant to happen right. You need to trust this. I am taking care of you. Your body is taking care of you. But this will happen for you and your husband. I want you to trust that. I want this for you. And it's okay that you're angry at me. Take that on me rather than yourself or your husband. I can handle it. And believe me, you can handle this too. You heard it this morning in the meeting, and we'll give you more than you can have. I promise. Because I love you. I share it because in the darkest possible place I could have ever been. Losing a two babies. I have God. And it's amazing to me that's what this program has brought me, is amidst the bumps in the road of life, that's where my faith shows up best for me. It's where God shows up best for me. And I have to say, it was a huge turning point in my recovery. It was 5 years ago. I actually had 2 children. It didn't look at all the way that I thought it was supposed to look. I mean, at all. But God actually had a much bigger plan for me than I ever could have seen in that moment, in that pain. So, how does this relate right now? I don't know what I'm doing for work tomorrow, today, next week. I know I made it through that though. And I know that I came out the other side with everything I wanted, just in a different way. And I believe that the same is true about my career. I believe that the same is true in how I deal with food. I actually just heard in a meeting a couple doors over, a reading from Voices of Recovery, and I wrote it down. It's all this text, and I will be going to find it in my own book. But it basically just talked about when you find God in your disease, we think that we can just turn to God about food. But the truth of the matter is, we got to turn to God about food, like every bit of it. And to me, being able to turn to God in devastation and tragedy, being able to turn to God in a career disappointment, because let's be honest, it's a disappointment. That was a tragedy. This is a disappointment. Is the same in for me being able to turn to God and say, please help me stay away from the diet. You know? I have to turn it perfect. Thank you. I have to turn it all over to God. That's how I make through life continuing to be asked. Because God works a hell of a lot better than skipping me. I think I would love to go ahead and wrap it up and hear from you guys, because that's really what I need this morning, you know. Thank you for allowing me to be a service, but I'd love you all to be a service too, and share how you are grappling with your, you know, eating disorder, with your anorexia, bulimia, in the current rough patches of your life. So thank you, and the meeting is now open for 3 minutes. Please focus your share on the topic and limit your sharing to 3 minutes to give others a chance to share. I will keep an eye on the clock, and the session will end at 10:55 a.m. And I will choose people to share. Who would like to share?
Sure. Okay. I'm going to sit down. I think.
Great.
I'm Kathy, and I'm a compulsive reader and bulimic.
Hi, Kathy.
And, the thing that I keep thinking about is courage. And I became a bulimic when I was 16, and that's been like over 40 years ago. And, you know, I was thinking with my bulimia, it's been like stages of healing. When I was 22, I was really in bad shape. Well, I was in bad shape in my high school years and up to about my 20s with really bad laxative abuse, vomiting, restricting. I would like to maybe 40 Correctol, and in the middle of the night I'd be passing out on the floor from probably dehydration. And so, I mean, it got real bad. So my first little bit of healing was getting to OA and going to a therapist who said to me, right now, if all you can do is just not use laxative, just do that. And that's all she asked me to do, to stop the laxative. And that stuck. I have never had to go back to laxative abuse. And then it took a little longer for the purging. When I was 46, I got this wonderful sponsor, and we worked together, and I had 11 years of abstinence from bulimia, and I had some kind of relapse, but basically I've had pretty much since then, that'd be about 16 years of freedom from the bulimia, like I say, with some slips. But what I see is in my recovery, when I'm absent, when I'm not practicing my disease, God gives me courage. Because it is a rocky path. Since I got abstinent from the bulimia, I've had a mom die, a dad die, a daughter divorce. I mean, I've had some really tough life things. But I was telling someone yesterday, when I look back on some of that stuff, I don't see it being awful. I see God giving me courage to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I see myself with strength when I'm not turning to food, and when I'm facing life, and when I'm putting one foot in front of the other and getting help. I see myself as a courageous person who's feeling it, but I'm not hiding the food. And you know, my latest little thing lately is the past 6 months I've had to put 2 dogs to sleep. My third dog, who I thought would be the healthy one, I find out just a week ago, has extreme total kidney failure. And so now we're doing all these things. I'm giving this dog IVs at home. I mean, it's like all, and they told me the dog would probably live 3 months. And I'm like, this is the one I'm supposed to live, you know. But, you know, even going through this, I see myself right now, because I am abstinent and I'm working with the program, I feel like I'm going through it not through fear, but with courage. And that, to me, that's trouble of courage.
Adrian, overeater bulimic.
Hi, Adrian.
Thank you so much for your share. To be so intimate and so honest with exactly where you're at, and then sharing something so private. I go, like, that's how I share and not how everybody shares in the rooms, but when I see that, it gives me the strength to completely be myself, which I think is kind of what this whole path is about, is really trying to find you know, be true to yourself without all of these things that we use to make ourselves feel better. And I went through 7 years of in vitros, 4 in vitros, and almost died and was in the hospital for weeks, intensive care, pus up to here, whatever. And finally, I now have my miracle child. And so, but I related a lot to your story, so thank you so much. I have been in program. My bottom line abstinence is I don't stick my finger on my throat and I keep my food. I started practicing bulimia at 12. I'm 51. From 12 to in my 20s, it was terrible. There were times in my 20s where it would be 7 and 8 times a day. I have a heart murmur from it, problems with my throat, gum deterioration. And I also used to be a drug addict alcoholic and smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And so I found when I was doing the drugs and alcohol and smoking that the bulimia would stay at bay. And when I would try to get sober, whoop, there it came again. So every time I'd get sober, I'd start getting sick again, and I thought, I am not doing this. I would rather be like stoned on weed all the time than be a bulimic. And so it was at bay for many years. I kind of just made a decision in my 20s. I'm not doing that anymore. I'll just get stoned every day. And so that's what I did. And finally, at I'm now like 8.5 years sober from all those other things. And it kind of coincided with I got sober. Then a couple of years later, you know, trying to get pregnant, finally quit smoking at 2 months pregnant. That's the kind of addict I am. You know, try to do something for 8 years, but still smoking cigarettes. When I finally, when I was pregnant, I put on 100 pounds. Because here we are, we can now eat with impunity. And after having my child, so, you know, some of it naturally came off, and then some of it I dieted off, and then I was kind of left with 40 pounds. And so I decided to come back into this room. And then I started hearing about bulimia, and I know this is, like, messed up, and I certainly hope this hasn't happened with other people, but it was like, oh, right, I can do that. So then I started messing around with the bulimia again. So then my abstinence was no binging and no purging, and last year I almost had a year of that, and I'd gotten back to the weight I was at most of my life. And I'll just wrap it up. But I could never kind of figure, like, what was a binge? I knew what a purge was. And so anyway, over this last year, I've been in relapse. I put back on all the weight. And the sponsor and I finally decided my bottom line abstinence is just no purging. And that's what I just try to do today. And I really feel that because of all these diseases, it brings me to God. Because quite frankly, if I was completely 100% on my own, I don't know that I'd be seeking God all the time. 18 times a day, you know. So thank you for letting me share. I'm so grateful that I can share.
Thanks, Sherry. Hi, I'm Alexis, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Alexa.
And I really appreciate your share. Thank you. I started this program September 2013, really new. And with the project, that's the first thing that I just immersed myself into. So I'm super grateful. I started laxatives, 11 to 12, and by the junior year of high school, I was, using laxatives, 6 times a day, and, trying to maintain that. Started off with, a whole half a pound, and then, I was like, ooh, I can lose a pound and a half. And the high that I just kept getting off of it. And then the whole body image thing about, whether or not somebody would like me or would they even marry me, and trying to figure out, all the things that went into it. I was only in high school trying to figure out what to do with my body that day, because I went through so many extremes. And I just really appreciate hearing your pitch, because I don't think too much in the rooms about getting married, people can love you with all the disease you have and you're accepted. And I know in the rooms you feel accepted, but when it comes to the opposite sex and going through that and trying to get pregnant and figuring it out and wondering how your partner feels about that, it just immediately I would totally go back to my belief, because it would be so unmanageable. And come to this grim statement and realize, like, obviously it's going to be unmanageable to be like, yes, losing your job, changing jobs, obviously, because it's not my work part I'm supposed to be in control over. So I really appreciate it. Like, I'm so grateful for that, because I'm taking way more courageous steps. And like they say, it's so cliche, God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. I hope that helps out with that quote, because before coming to the program, I started looking for a higher power, but I couldn't really assist it. And shortly after, like literally the day I came, I stopped having access. And it's by the grace of God. It's not like, I don't even know how to describe it. And I even added like fruit juice. Like, I can't even take fruit juice. Like, my grandma had to be home to take the time off. She was so worried about my body. And recently, because I fully like stopped having access with my body, kind of like that, digested it. And like, what are you supposed to do after a meal? Like, look, I thought these things, but they get so interesting. Because like, I've gained weight and then lost weight, so my body's trying to find out, how do I digest certain grains or foods? And it's so, like, scary, because now all I'm doing is thinking about myself and, like, trying to figure out if somebody else would like me. It's so vulnerable, but I'm happy that I'm able to be vulnerable.
Aside from everything else, I take people away and I work relationships. and I don't want to lose them. And I don't want to lose myself to the new again. And I'm so grateful that this weekend is here and I can get it.
And that's not necessarily with the food plan that people told me, but I still, if I don't eat it at 9 a.m. in the morning, am I like a bad person? If I don't make the meals ahead of time or plan out my day or call it in, did I do it wrong? And it's just that the things that have worked for me, I just can't categorize in a way that's like, this is an accident. I mean, I don't subscribe to the not getting sugar for myself. Because that's all it will do is make me want to eat all of that sugar and shove it all in my mouth because I'm not allowed to have it. So I'm just kind of looking for people to help me with that. And here are some of people's experience with, you know, being on the restrictor side of things and how they work their abstinence and if they have a food plan, what, you know, how they design that. Because I'm not good at planning meals ahead of time. I used to do that. Never worked. I used to put on a calendar. I'm going to eat this, and I'm going to eat this, and I'm going to eat this, and I'm going to eat this. Never worked for me. That was my old perfectionist diet mentality, and I could never adhere to it. And it just makes me so uncomfortable to think that I have to do something like that. So,
I'm Kirsten from Central Leader of Lamex.
Hi, Kirsten.
And I'm fairly new to this program. I'm getting around 90 days of abstinence, and that's from the bulimia, and I also have a pastor with anorexia with us. Was a while ago. I can't remember a time when I ever had a normal relationship with my body. Even as young as fifth grade, I remember thinking food was bad, and that's it. And in my house, it was, you know, you were always on a diet, you always worked out, and that's how you got approval from people. That's how you knew you were good. You had a good day if you ate the right food, whatever right food is. But in my house, there was right food. And that just carried with me throughout my life. I thought everybody lived that way. I thought everybody tried to eat under 1,000 calories a day and then work out for 45 minutes. Or you ate until you were so full that you couldn't even sit up straight, so you would go to the bathroom and relieve yourself of everything. Or you took 5 laxatives before you went to work and were had to rush in and out of the bathroom because you couldn't hold it. You had to go. I thought that was normal. And I remember one day I was at work and I had a job where I had to lift very heavy boxes. And I had just taken a bunch of laxatives and I almost passed out at work. And I was thinking, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this. I'm absolutely miserable. I am miserable. I literally live for my next meal so that I can go to the bathroom and get rid of it. That is what my life has come to. That's the only thing I live for right now is the food. And food was on my mind literally any time I was awake. And I also have a habit of waking up 2 or 3 in the morning, going to the kitchen, and I will just eat. So I didn't even have relief from food while I slept. It was food all the time. And I was driving down the road with my mom, completely depressed day. I didn't talk to anybody. I had to get out of the house, and I was driving down one of the busy roads, and I saw a sign on the corner that said, do you have a problem with food? And instantly, I just looked, and I saw OA, and I said, what is this? And I immediately got on my phone, took down the number, put my phone away. I didn't want my mom to see anything like that, because she thought I was doing okay. She thought I was better. And I called the number, and I went to that meeting, and before I got inside the meeting, I sat in my car, and I Googled, how do you become brave? Because I was terrified to walk through those doors. I was terrified to give up all my behaviors because, oh, how much weight am I going to gain? Or, oh, what am I going to do without, you know, this control of my food? And I found some wonderful site on Google that gave me tips on how to be brave. And I walked through those doors, and the first person I saw was the person who is my sponsor now. And I can't even describe how much my life has changed. You know, even my terrible, awful days are a million times better than any day I had in my eating disorder. And right now, I am completely 100% uncomfortable in my skin. And that is my biggest struggle, is waking up in the morning and being nice to myself, because I can wake up and I'll be awake for 10 minutes and I've already said 100 negative things about myself. And it doesn't make me want to be nice to myself the rest of the day, but I have found that for myself, if I just pause and I try to appreciate what my body has been through and what it does do for me, that the days are a little easier. Thank you for having me.
I always jump in and ask this is the A to B, but I'm Susan, compulsive overeater, bulimic. I'm so glad I got here. There's still half an hour left. Nothing until now, but so far, so neat. I invented anorexia at the age of 16 back in 1956, and I'm 57 it might have been. Anyway, I can't remember. Around Thanksgiving of 56, come to think of it, and spent years doing the stuff that everybody talks about. I didn't find OA until I was maybe a little shy of 50. So I spent my 30s and 40s raising 2 sons, being a teacher. Every day I come home and say, today, you know, I get up in the morning and I say, today I'm going to be good. And I feel a lot of people use that phrase, I'm going to be good. And that only meant one thing to me. I wasn't going to grow up. I wasn't going to grow up. And I was usually pretty well all day, you know, until I got home where I had a chance to be by myself. And I'd open the door, which led into the kitchen, and the first place I'd go would be the refrigerator. And yeah, but some people would even describe as that Frigidaire sunburn. But staring in there, and I think, oh, shit, I've done it again. And I had so many behaviors that were so negative before I came in. It's like, if I cross the threshold, I'm sure this is probably something wrong with everybody. And, you know, it would be like, I know, oh, this is too much. And once that happened, the binge was on. I'd be eating meat as long as I could, and then trying to get rid of it. I threw up, and I remember looking for toilets that flushed. You know, it was one that you have to flush 17 times before it all goes away. You know, good stuff like throwing up in the yard, you know, the trash, hiding food, lying about food. I remember as a sister-in-law turned out she was alcoholic and not very healthy, but hearing her talk about how she loved to have the kids play at the house with her friends because she got to know all their friends and realizing that I had kind of spent my kids' childhood loving them to death, but looking for those times when they were playing at somebody else's house because that's when I was doing. And coming into OA changed a lot for me. I started thinking in healthier ways. I started having periods of longer and longer abstinence. The longest I ever had before we got here from New Mexico was 2 years, just shy of 2 years. That was abstinence from bulimia. For me, the bottom line was, since that was the only behavior that I ever could really do, and I got pretty good at it. If I wasn't bulimic, I wasn't, you know, I was abstinent. I'll wrap it up. Took me until about a year ago to really get into the higher power thing, and that just transformed everything. I didn't think that was and for me, that higher power is a part of me that I know is a good, strong, human, good person part, and I trust that part that's been given to my higher power, and I believe in it, and I have faith in it. And every time I hear myself saying, come on, don't you? I know that voice probably never going to go away, but it's a real life. And I don't need it anymore. It's just there, but I don't need it anymore.
Christina, compulsive eater.
Hi, Christina.
Reading the steps is fine, but then when it comes to me being completely vulnerable, I get kind of anxious, but I push through it. So about 12 years ago, I stepped into the room for the first time. It was probably like 230, 40 pounds. And, you know, I sat in a couple of meetings, and I was like, okay, this is completely broken. There's no way this is going to work. And so I left. And by, like, 2004, I topped out at 272 pounds and, you know, still looking for the magical cure. I had gastric bypass. And I lied my way through the psyche valve and all that kind of stuff and, you know, all the rules and stuff that go with the surgery. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do all that. You know, looking great, I'm done. And I did lose the weight. By 2006, I went down to about 130 pounds. You know, and I was still sick in my head. You know, I thought, once I'm down to an ideal weight, I will be happy. That's what it's going to make me happy. And it didn't. And people saw the, you know, the weight loss and started complimenting me and how good I looked. And that was my new high. And from there, I stopped eating. I barely ate enough to, like, just once in a great while to kind of curb, but I was really restricting. And by 2007, I was completely anemic, and, you know, all my levels, my labs and stuff were completely off, and I was fatigued and all that kind of stuff. And I started working with a registered dietitian, and I was with a therapist at the time who, you know, she kept telling me that she couldn't handle, you know, she wasn't qualified to work with someone with an eating disorder, and that if I didn't start eating and get it under control, that she would have to send me to someone else. And that was enough to get me to start eating again. Gradually, it took a while. And then, you know, like I said, by 2007, everything was off. And so over the years, you know, I started maintaining a healthy body weight and everything, and then picked up with the compulsive overeating, and that's my biggest issue is the overeating. And I came back into the program and for real in June of 2013, and at that point, I was about 75 pounds heavier than I am now. I had gained some of the weight back, you know, on the surgery and everything. And I lost the weight with the program. And then at some point over, like, the last 6 months, people have been commenting, you know, you're looking too thin. And that started triggering those old thoughts about, you know, when I was restricting and everything. And so I'm still working with the same dietitian. We have worked together off and on over the last 7 years. And so I checked in with her. I started tracking my teeth and everything. And, you know, when I checked in with her, my labs were all great. My food is perfect. Not perfect, but she's been, you know, impressed by it. My weight is great. And for me, I have to watch because I do have to make sure that I don't eat under my calories. But at the same time, you know, if my activity level or whatnot has caused me to, you know, be kind of under for the day, I can't then turn around and say, okay, well, this is my excuse to eat, because then that will start the compulsive overeating. So there's, it's like a fine line for me. So, yeah, trying to track everything that becomes an obsession and can be too much. So, yeah, it's like a fine line that kind of struggles.
Probably have time for two more shares. Anyone would like to have spoken yet? Or has everyone spoken?
Molly. Molly, people still over here, won't they?
Hi, Molly.
I'm so glad this weekend is here. And what brought me to LA from out of state was work, but really I had to make an effort to come to this when I could, because I have to put my program first. And what I've gotten from being here this weekend is I've done some disgusting things with food in my eating disorder and between trying to be a good bulimic. Like, I laugh and I go, I really suck at it, so I just have to work it up. I have to work it off. Because I'm just not good at it. So I'm just being hope on this thing. Anyway, and it's like a sick joke, but for so long, and I'm just sitting here thinking, what progress? Like, I could have. And here, I helped move. Anyway, I have a 92-year-old grandmother who's dying, and whatever. And I spent time with her this morning rather than, like, my plan was to be at the gym by 7. God's plan didn't have that happening. And to be present for someone that I love and to roll with it and to know that I have my addict well in my head and to say that's it's a lot of growth because since my teens, it's that math. I ate this, I have to do this to get rid of it. I always had to be like the negative. And that defined my worth. My worth based on, like, there's still that voice that's like, why would you go to the body image workout? I don't work. Why would you go to the workshop? Like, I don't want to, we're going to have to look at our butt. Like, but that's my habit. You know, and today I can still have that voice, but I don't have to, like, live in a funhouse mirror, is what I call it, because I don't see what other people see. And all I can say is it's literally a moment at a time. I just went black last weekend, and I needed to share it. And I always hated when people were like, turn it over, surrender. I was like, okay. And so what I thought surrender was, the best analogy I could come up with was,
I'll get out of the driver's seat, but I'm in the passenger seat. That's me surrendering. Let go of the wheel. No, I need to put my ass in the trunk. Not get out, ever. And wherever it goes, know that I have a solution. And I, for sure, can do this by myself. So doing it by myself got me suicidal in the hospital. We've all done it. You know, I'm not uniquely different. We all have our stories and our rock bottoms, and what I thought was my rock bottom wasn't my rock bottom. You know, being in an eating disorder or being in my addiction when I was in treatment, you know, it's like, I win. You know, that's what, right? Like, I'm really sick, I win. I get the, you know, addiction, you know, rhythm. But, so anyway, I just appreciate such, you know, a forum to, like, be truthful. It really gives me the freedom from the session.
Anyone else like them? It is now time to close this session. I would like to thank those of you who gave service at this